Hey, folks, what a show we have for you today. Very excited about it, but I'm also very excited to tell you about the sponsor we're working with here over at Verbal Shenanigans. As we turn the corner from the cold, dreary winter into the warmer days of spring, a new season of fantasy baseball begins at DynastySportsEmpire.com. DynastySportsEmpire.com offers you a unique fantasy baseball experience for owners young and old and abilities of all levels. So what makes DSE unique? For starters, you can draft high school and international baseball phenoms as young as 16. You can retain ownership of your favorite players for their entire career and build a cash cow contender that would make any front office envious for years to come. Check out all the fantasy baseball formats over at DynastySportsEmpire.com today or tweet them at DSC Fantasy. That's at DSC Fantasy on Twitter or online at DynastySportsEmpire.com. All right, guys, let's get to today's episode.
This is Randy Lewis, professor of biology at Utah State University, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Ooh, this is fun. We're figuring out what Mike needed a second for.
I turned up the lights a little.
Oh.
Just so you can see me a little better.
So you wanted me to have more visual appeal from you.
Well, I want you to see my bouncy hair. I mean, I've been growing it out for a year now for you, like you like. So.
It is pretty long. It is definitely the longest I've ever seen. Did you get a haircut?
No, Until I go through my shots, I have until I need to go into work as in a group of people will be into work. I have no reason to. It's one of those.
I don't think it looks bad. I'd be surprised if you went all the way short again when you're done.
No, I mean, after a while doing this, I've come to the realization like I've never been into growing out my hair long. Like I had like an ex that like kept on begging me to do that, but like I was always like, no, I've always had my hair short.
Oh Mike, please grow your hair long and luscious, please.
I mean, it was something like that. I mean, it was more feminine the way it was presented to me, but
gotcha. You know. Well, I can't provide that for you at this moment. So,
I mean, that's why we gotta get interns, you know.
Have you thought about now if you're gonna cut it? Let's say like you are going back to normalcy. Could you like play around with it the week before? Like, can we get weird with it? Like some cornrows for a day, maybe full mullet for a day. Like, kind of plan it out so you can have like a new thing every couple days.
I mean, I wouldn't bat an eye to it if I knew I was gonna go right back to it and play around with it. I mean, I had no issues. I mean, I had that Halloween outfit the once where I shaved the one side and let the other side grow out.
You did, you did. You grew a mustache for like a week or so.
Yeah, I opened up Shenanigan Showdown, literally shaving everywhere except the mustache for a week. So,
all right. Well, maybe you could go to like a NASCAR race in full mullet and just see like if anybody even like if you just fit in down there.
I don't think it's really that hard. like I said, I mean, after the shock that the wife took taking her to Talladega, I don't think any other racetrack could really compared to the experience of that. So,
well, anyway, people, I'm sorry we kind of jumped in the conversation there, but I had the record button go, so I didn't feel like stopping it and then starting again. So
editing is not our strong point.
You know, like I could edit all we want, but that involves like time and listening back to ourselves, and that's a brutal experience. So I like the one-time deal, chopping it up and giving to you the way it is. But anyway, welcome to the show. Welcome to Verbal Shenanigans. Coming off quite a 1-2 punch, I would say, Mike. We had Sam from Dogfish, followed by Butch Patrick
of Eddie Munster. And then, strangely enough, we were graced with Munster's news this week.
Yeah, apparently there's going to be a Munster's movie directed by Rob Zombie.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that.
I'm kind of scratching my head as they're going for the dark tone. Like some of we brought up in the last interview, there was a pilot on NBC called Mockingbird, which was like kind of a reboot with who's the dude from Sliders? I forget his name.
I don't know.
But he was like the the Herman Munster and like. I had to look up something. Eddie Izzard, I believe, was Grandpa for that episode.
Really?
And it was like a real dark tone where it was almost like he had to perform.
Was like, it Jerry O'Connell from Sliders?
Jerry O'Connell.
Oh,
thank
yeah, jeez.
So Jerry O'Connell, like at the end of the episode, died and Grandpa brought him back and he held on to his heart. Ergo, that's why he was like. And he was indebted to the family. It was
interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting, but I'm not sure if that was going to be like a weekly thing that's going
to
go.
I almost feel like if there's that much energy to make it different and turn it like just make a separate show. Like I don't think it like the Munsters was like kind of lighthearted and fun. Like I feel like Rob Zombie's like Eddie Munster's going to be like murdering people and like tearing their guts out.
Well, that's kind of concerned Mark, because I read into the article and they're talking about like his wife is going to play Lily and the guy who's done like The Devil's Rejects and House of a Thousand Corpses. He's going to take on the role of Herman. So it's kind of like, all right, are we getting Rob Zombie's vision of this?
Yeah, feeling it. I was happy that the news came out the same week we posted the podcast, which was pretty cool. But I'm not feeling the connection there. It's like, oh, wow, because it's a monster, Rob Zombie gets to mess it up. Yeah. Also, Rob Zombie, incredibly overrated in my mind.
I think he got knocked for the first Halloween. I think I liked that, and I did like The Devil's Rejects more than House of a Thousand Corpses, but then he keeps aiming for it, and it all comes back kind of same, like misconstrued and not really worth it. Like his sequel to his Halloween, where it's like it was like mental, and Laurie Strode is hallucinating that Michael's in control of her and her mother and holding her down. It's just. Some visions aren't really working out. And he seems kind of normal in interviews and talking with him, but I'm not sure if he can bring that normalcy to a movie.
Also, I find him as like after a while, he's kind of like the shock value guy. The shock value only works well over and over if there's got to be a good story first. You know, it always comes down to that. Like, you know, like. I don't know. Like to me, it's like those Saw movies. Like, yeah, the first one was kind of okay. That was different, kind of indie film. And the rest of them just became like a sadomasochist. Like, okay, we're just gonna torture a bunch of people and then be like, oh crap, the old guy's back. You know, like it kind of felt like the same thing over and over again.
Torture, 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 torture. Twist at the end. That's a Saw movie.
I'm not big into the torture movie, man. Especially the older I've gotten, like the Hostels and the Saws. Like it just. I don't know. It's like uneasy for me at this point. I don't know.
I think, watching horror later on in my life, it's not as bad. There are certain things that will get to me, like in Hostel where the guy cut the one dude's Achilles on both of them and told him he's free to go. Just him getting up and you see like that gap in his foot. That was kind of gnarly looking.
I just think the sole purpose of watching a movie to basically to see torture is a little weird to me. It's kind of like, I don't know, I feel like people are like, in a way, like, it's something they want to see in their subconscious. Like, they kind of want to see it and view it and make it worse and top it. I don't know. It just kind of never hit me after a while.
I think if you have an interesting turn on it, it could be all right. Like, some of them, I've seen some things like the Belko experiment where they kind of brought that gore to an office situation was kind of interesting. What the premise was, like, there's like 100 people in this office in a foreign country, and then all the security doors come down, lock up, and they hear an announcement on the overhead. You basically, somebody has to be murdered within the next 5 minutes, or else five people will die. Hmm. And then, like, everybody's looking around. They're just normal office people.
Isn't that why you left your last job?
No, that's how I survived to get to my new job here in Georgia, actually. I think they were telling me to murder, or maybe it was just saying pizza in the back room.
It was a weird, weird ending.
I just went for it.
Yeah. It was a weird last day on the job. That's all you can say.
The exit interview involved a lot of running away from flashing blue and red lights.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you got to give Rob Zombie a chance, but like the lightheartedness of the monsters is I think what people loved. I don't think anybody's like, oh my god, I want to see Eddie just murder. Like, I don't think anybody's like craving that. I mean, we all have bad ideas. I was thinking about some bad ideas we've had on the podcast over the years. We talked about the Shenanigans Showdown. Good idea in theory, but definitely needed some tweaking. For those of you don't know what we're talking about, we did this thing. We tried to do a year-long challenge where we had all these challenges and they were worth points. And it started off cool, and then things like life gets in the way and gets busy, and you kind of forgot about it for a month or two. And then, I don't know. It was the year-long part of it definitely took me out of it. Like, I was kind of like, oh, I'll get to it, you know. I'm going to do all these. And then before you know it, it's like November. And I'm like, oh, crap. I can't do any of these things.
Yeah, I got the lead, and I just kept on holding. I'm like, all right, I'm going to wait for something. And if I recall, like, New Year's Eve, I took care of, like, two other ones where, like, the only way you could tie me was to do, like either, like, three major ones or the major one, the 50-pointer.
Yeah.
So I just put myself in. It was good. I mean, it was well worth the reward of a free dinner that I never got.
Yeah. Well, it's still out there sometimes. I mean, you did move away, so that kind of makes it a little harder to go to dinner.
I mean, we got Medieval Times down here in Georgia, if I recall.
Now you want a dinner and a show.
No, that was...
That is true.
The agreement was Medieval Times, and I'm saying it's down here, so it's not my fault you have to pay for the trip down here and the dinner after that.
I mean, we've had a couple bad ideas over the years. We had... We thought we were going to watch all the Leprechaun movies. That started off great.
I think we made it to...
I watched the one. That's all I know, is I watched one movie.
I don't think we even made it through the whole movie. Like, I remember we had the idea.
Yep.
And I think we got a good 20, 30 minutes into it. Like, we were stopping and we were podcasting, recording it, talking about stuff. But we never really... ended the movie, ergo even going to the next six in the batch.
Yes. So we decided we were going to watch all the Leprechaun movies, even like the worst of the worst, the ones in space and everything else. And that didn't last long. Another bad idea I had written down was Alien Sunday. That ended in disaster.
I thought it was a good episode, but we never took it further than that.
Yeah, so Alien Sunday was an idea I had with a friend of mine. We're going to watch an alien movie, all different types of alien movies. Alien, it could be Independence Day, anything with aliens in it. And we're going to review it and talk about it. And we're going to have a beer that was kind of like an alien theme. The problem was we had like 80 beers before that. And I think we went to two breweries before. Then we had... this strong imperial stout called Cosmonaut from Cartonin Brewery, and I had everything set up. I had like a nice round table and the movie, and then halfway through, everybody, it just collapsed miserably. And then I tried to listen back to it, and at one point it's just like, it just did not sound very sober halfway through.
I guess another problem was I believe there was five or six of us that were prepared to do the cast, which right off the bat, you should have known there was little to zero possibility we would have got all together for episode two.
Yes. Let alone. I mean, the idea was to kind of, it didn't have to be like that full round table every time. And it was going to kind of be like, maybe like a monthly spinoff. And I'd still be down to like do an episode the real way. But, you know, that one fell short. Another bit I thought that bombed terribly was we did Fluffy Bunny one time. I don't know if you remember that one. We had
with KP Burke and Ritu Chantra.
Yeah, yeah. And the game is where you stick a marshmallow in your mouth and you have to say Fluffy Bunny. And the more you get, more marshmallows you get in your mouth, obviously, the more difficult it becomes. And I had us read a Seinfeld script. Don't ask me why. It seemed like a good idea at the time, but I remember like halfway through it was just kind of gross and wasn't really working either.
I mean, I think everybody was on board for it. If I recall, even like when we were thinking about it, like we had to do a beer run, and then like the beer place by you was like closing at the right same time, and I think Ritu even had to like talk to the manager to let her in to get her alcohol. So I mean, it was good in spirits, but it's the execution.
I thought a bad idea for us was doing wrestling commentary. That didn't work out too well.
Oh, there's maybe only like three or four episodes I sit back and say, absolutely no reason for you to say go out and go watch it. Mm-hmm. Probably our wrestling commentary would have been one. Maybe listen for the interviews at the beginning. Like we had a cute little thing where the wrestlers had to do a promo and Scott had to guess. No, I forget if it was the wrestlers or you had to do a promo and the other had to guess who was doing the promo. It was kind of like,
yeah, I don't remember. Yeah. Card,
and it was like, they'd be like, oh, you think I'm bringing you gifts this year? No, man, I'm the pain giver, not the gift giver, blah, blah. And they'd be like, are you Santa Claus? Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. And the interview part was fine. We went to this wrestling event, and so a little background on it. We picked, you know, we just were able to kind of interview all different people and kind of wrangle different wrestlers. We even got Earl Hebner, the famous referee and whatnot. And that was cool. But it was like massively long. It was so long. And we were like trying to go out that night to watch the Conor fight. And like they wanted us to interview the owner or the, what do you call him? I don't know. The promoter of the wrestling thing. And he was like, oh yeah, I'll do it afterwards. Now afterwards at a wrestling event is like 3 hours of wrestling. And then, like, breakdown and, like, when he had a free minute. And we were just completely toasted. But we thought it would be fun to call our friend Pete Nixon, who is a wrestler, his match. And he happens to be a very big, gigantic man that doesn't move very much. And we also have, let's see, zero experience calling wrestling matches. So me and Mike were trying to just, like, make something that wasn't exciting. It was a pretty terrible episode. At that point, it might have been okay before. I'm not sure, but
we probably should have done a few runs just like watching a regular match and like goofing around, pretending to be announcers for that before just going gung ho in the middle of the ring. I think even at a few points, like the audience were looking at us like, what the hell are they doing over there?
Oh, yeah, it was bad. It was real bad. I mean, another bad idea was putting three really good guests on one episode. I don't know what I was thinking on that one. We had like three guests that would hold their own on any episode. Now we used to do, kind of took us a long time to learn too. We would put like two guests on the episode. Like they could be two really interesting guests and we'd cram them, two of them on, and the episode would be 2 hours long. And, you know, a lot of people probably wouldn't hear the second one, or you'd be like, oh, Al Snow, and then there'd be like another person on. Like it just, there was no point to it. And I thought it'd be like, oh, let's do this really random episode. When we had these three guests, we had Christian Okoye, you know, legend in the NFL. Then we had
Nightmare.
Then we had is it Damian Harris? Is that his name?
They wanted to say Darren Harris.
Well, anyway, we had a Jamaican bobsledder on, and then we had. So Jamaican bobsledder obviously is a really interesting episode. We could have had that. And then we had Randy Santel as like a competitive eater that has a massive following. We crammed them all into one episode, which if each of those interviews were a half hour, plus we talked, it must have been a 2.5 hour episode. I could look it up, but yeah, that wasn't a fantastic idea here from Mr. Scott.
And then to it, if I recall, going into the night, we had nobody, and we panicked, and then, like, everything came together. Like, Randy was the first one to said yes, followed by Darren, followed by the third person. So it was
The third person. See, he's already forgetting. See, that's why we don't do that on an episode. Christian Okoye was the other one.
Christian Okoye, thank you. Yeah. Thank you, yeah. Who is he? Oh, great, now he's dead.
Yeah, yeah. yeah, so we've had our... We've made our mistakes before, but I think we got our format down. So I'm trying to think of some other disastrous times, but I'm sure there's plenty.
Me not drinking water before Kilt Fest comes to mind.
Oh yeah, that was good. That was good. You dying, like carrying the equipment and like basically having like heat stroke on the way over to the table.
No, it was my reoccurring cramps and all.
Yes.
The leg cramps. Yeah, that was. And oddly, I think it went with like a 3-week stretch. Like when we were doing stuff, I had to like get up because I was getting leg cramps for no good reason. I think like during pumpkin spice, whatever, I got up during it and had to walk around.
I'm going to give this one a... And then when we went LARPing, you almost died too. You had like a soda can on your head with a headache.
Yeah, I had a bad headache. I had to let loose some stomach contents on the side of the barn, if I recall. I had to figure out how to say in LARP, "Listen, can you give me an aspirin?"
You were just you were just so nervous for battle. That's why you were, you know, guys throw up before, and you know, the nerves take over.
I think we like went into the kitchen where like there were regular workers, and I was kind of like, hey, "Can I just talk to you? Like not in
you, yeah, sire? Like, can I?
Have, okay, that's enough.
Can
that's
I have enough. An elixir to ease the pain in thy head?" We also had someone on from a movie called like Killer Unicorns or something like that. That it was like a. I don't know. It was supposed to be like a horror movie, like a LGBT horror movie. And basically this guy just like made the interview as vulgar as possible, like really bad. And it just kind of turned to us like, I remember I said to Mike afterwards, like, I don't think I want to air that. Like it was not a pretty, I don't know. It was just not our style.
Yeah. I mean, there was something interesting going into it. Like you don't automatically assume with like the horror community and the gay community coming together and like having a project like that, it sounded interesting, but it was just the overtones of the interview just went more into like probably like a Howard Stern clone from like the 1980s type of let me be funny kind of deals where it's like I'm not sure this is gonna work nowadays.
Yeah, so we've had our share of disasters, but hopefully today's episode is not a disaster. You know,
can't be a disaster.
Can't be.
Stop, won't stop.
You know, we do have a unique guest today. I feel like we haven't delved into the science community in a little bit. You know, we've had the beer brewing community a lot lately. We always have the musician community a lot. We've had some actors on, but Mike, we're definitely delving into another territory here. Someone that would probably outsmart both of us if he was 30 beers deep and we were completely sober tenfold. We do have an interesting guest. Who we got, Mike?
Scott, we have had some interesting animal stories on the show in the past.
Oh yeah.
We've had Paul Templer surviving a hippo attack.
Correct.
We've had the goat man, Thomas Thwaites, who walked and ate and lived life as a goat with a group of goats.
You know, every time that interview comes up, I get like a smile on my face because that was one of the most bizarre interviews. And we got a book from him. You guys got to go back and check that one out. This guy decided he was going to live like a goat. I think his goal was for a year. I don't know if he made it that long, but he like literally built like goat apparatus to like walk around. And he actually ate grass. It was just so bizarre and awesome.
He like built a custom stomach.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had those. We've had fun talks with Sky Falconry and Reindeer Farms. But tonight, we talked to about an animal that probably most people have never known existed. And that is spider goats.
That's that new Marvel movie, man.
I know. So tonight we are going to be talking with Dr. Randy Lewis, who is a professor of molecular biology at Utah State. And he will be telling us about the work that's been done to cross DNA from spiders with goats to create spider silk in their milk. Should be a really fascinating story for everybody who's never heard of this.
How about instead of doing the interview, Mike, you just sum it all up for us, like exactly what the process is.
Well, when a goat loves a spider.
like Charlie Day. Charlie Kelly.
It seems like something Charlie would say in Always Sunny.
When a goat loves a spider.
You gotta be careful, no. You gotta leave out the cat food. You don't want the spider goats coming in.
Remember that episode like Flowers for Charlie, where he's like, he gets real smart and like his whole thing with trying to make a cat talk to a spider or whatever. Well, yeah. You see, the cat can speak to the spider.
Yeah, as dumb as we're sounding, this gentleman is really smart. So listen to him as we're talking to him, okay?
So without further ado, here is our interview with Randy, Dr. Randy Lewis. Hey, Randy, what's up?
Not a lot. How about you?
Doing well. You in Wyoming right now?
No, I'm in Utah. I moved from the University of Wyoming to Utah State, so.
Gotcha. Are you a part of all that extreme weather up north, or you guys been doing all right?
We're finally catching up from lack of snow, so ski runs are going crazy right now, except that the ones down Salt Lake, the roads were so bad and avalanche that nobody got up there for the last 3 days, so. It's tough to get 100 inches of new snow and then not be able to ski.
Yeah.
Very wasteful. So, Dr. Lewis, I mean, looking at your background with being a professor, being a doctrine, being molecular biology, I feel kind of weird asking straight off the bat and all, dude, the second, like, some of us like contact you and bring up spider goats, are you kind of like, oh, not this subject again?
I won't say quite that. I think we sort of evolved beyond just spider goats now, so we've got other ways to make spider silk as well. So there's more than just the spider goats.
So tell us a little bit about your background before we get into what we plan to talk about, like what is your education? What got you into molecular biology? What did you strive for, and how did we get to where we're at right now?
So I went to Caltech as an undergrad, and then UC San Diego as a graduate student. And our efforts were really around trying to understand how proteins, which have in any individual have a huge number of different roles, how they do that. And so we first started studying the peptides that act like morphine that your body makes, called the natural opioid peptides. And so I spent several years working on those, sort of determining how it is the body learned to make them and to a certain extent how well they worked, and especially under stress situations. I had a colleague who went to work for a company out in San Diego, a new biotech company. And one of the questions they asked was, you know, can you make silk, without using a silkworm? And the answer was you can, but certainly not commercially viable. And so they asked about spider silk. And so I sort of examined that whole process and realized that spider silk had a lot of things to offer that silkworm doesn't have, mainly a very high strength combined with a very high elasticity. So looked to see how that went, and it turns out that nobody knew anything about the spider silk proteins. Huh. So the company gave me permission to see if we couldn't find a source of funding to look at it ourselves, and they've been talking with the Office of Naval Research, and person in charge of that asked if I'd send them a proposal. We did. Got two reviews, one of which said this could be the best thing since sliced bread. The other one said this is the stupidest idea I ever heard of. So fortunately for us, the program officer took the positive one and gave us some funding. And about a year after we got our funding, we had cloned the first spider silk gene, and that was in 1990. And we've been off and going ever since.
Now, what is your background? Like, as a kid, were you like a science nerd? Were you always into these kind of things? Or did this just like somewhere in, I don't know, college, you venture off to start doing this?
Yeah, I while I was an undergraduate, is when I really got interested in proteins. You know, there was a lot of work being done, but most of it was at a genetic level and not really at a protein level. So that's why we got started and moved into the protein area, and that's really where our focus has been. Is, you know, how do you make a protein that's as strong as Kevlar and as elastic as nylon? And those are sort of basic questions, but ones that that have a lot of subtleties to them.
So let's talk about like advancing on. So we're looking at spider genes and their silk, and like from initial. Some like reading up I did, it sounds like the spiders that were used, they kind of like don't get along with each other. Like they'll either fight or they'll cannibalize each other. So kind of curious how it got to how we manipulate an animal to create this silk. Is it really easier to change the DNA of an animal versus possibly training spiders?
Without a doubt. And part of that is simply, you know, we know a lot about fruit flies, we know quite a bit about ants. We really don't know very much about spiders. You know, people have studied them sort of in the wild, but not much in terms of more in the captive sort of realm. And I can tell you from our experience that, you know, you put more than one spider in a cage and you're going to end up with dead spiders. They just don't tolerate being around other spiders and do something about it. So, you know, even back 1990, where we weren't very good at manipulating genes like we are now, I can tell you that we're far more successful at being able to manipulate and move genes around than we used to be. But even then, it was clear that you know, in order to produce lots of silk, using spiders was not going to be the way to go.
Now, like, what is like? Give us a peek into an average day of Randy. Like, you go to work. What, like, this to us simpletons over here is really extreme stuff. You know, like to kind of wrap our head around. So, give us like, what is an average day? You walk in the office with your cup of coffee, and what do you do? What's your 9-to-5 look like?
Yeah, and you know, it varies a lot, but you know, the major thing that you're looking at is that we have students, and we have postdocs, and they do most of the experiments. So most of your time's been looking at data and, you know, talking with them about what are the next steps, and if you run into problems, how do you solve the problems? Those sorts of things. And honestly, keeping up with reading. You know, when we started doing this in you know, 1988, I can tell you that, you know, the number of papers about spider silk, you know, in a month you could count on one hand and probably have fingers left over. I can tell you right now that you know, the spider silk world has exploded. Now it's you know, how many tens of papers per month you're running into, you know, well, I would say right now there's probably a couple hundred papers a year that get published on some aspect of spider silk. So, you know, just trying to keep up with what everybody else is doing and how that impinges on your own research is really critical. You got to keep up with what other people are doing. So, you know, how to adjust your research and what novel things they're discovering, as well as writing your own papers and making sure that, you know, you get out information about what you're doing.
So what made them decide to go with goats? Is it, I would figure if you want the most, it would be a cow. Is it just a matter of DNA splicing or something specific where it's easier with goats? Or?
Yeah, there's a couple things. So we started out and got in touch with this company that in Canada, and they had developed for other reasons goats that were what we call breed early, lactate early. So in 5 months, they're sexually mature, and 5 months later, they could have a kid. So you're talking in less than a year from making your transgenic goat, you're actually getting milk from the goat. And that's obviously much, much faster than you can do in cows. So that was one real aspect of it, was just in terms of time. The second was that they had some cells in culture that acted like mammary cells. So you could actually test it out and ask the question, you know, will those cells make spider silk protein, and will they secrete it into the milk like you want the animal to do? So those were two really strong reasons to use goats and not to use cows. I'll tell you, you know, there are other things we learned along the way. And that is that sort of one of the key steps when you're doing this transgenic is that you have to make clones. And those are what you actually may do the genetic manipulation on. And for reasons that nobody knows very well, goats, for whatever reason, are much easier to clone than cows and sheep.
Huh.
You end up with, you know, with cows, you end up with low efficiency, number one, and also not an unreasonable number of them end up with some health problems. And you just don't have that with goats. So that's another reason that goats are good. And when you look at it on a basis of, you know, how much feed it costs you to put in a goat to get a gallon of milk, they're just as efficient as cows are. They adapt to humans very well. So that's another sort of makes it that they're really quite friendly in terms of that. And finally, I'll tell you, my people will say that baby goats are lots cuter than baby cows. So that's the final sociological sort of, you know, thing.
I guess if you got to get up at 9 a.m. and you see a cute little baby goat, it's all worth it. I hear you.
Yeah,
hear
yeah. You. It's a lot better than something great big like a baby cow. So you know, I think there were very clear scientific reasons why goats made a lot more sense.
What is the what's the process as far as you know, being able to be allowed to do like genetic experiments on, you know, animals like that? Like, is there a long process to get approval to be able to do that, or do you guys kind of have free reign as far as experiment wise?
We definitely don't have free reign.
Yeah.
It's unfortunately or fortunately, I guess, depending on your perspective.
Right.
Both the FDA and the USDA have governance over what we do. So you kind of have two agencies you got to keep happy. So you do have to go through a fairly lengthy process in order to get approval from the FDA to do it. Because they're experimental animals, you can't sell the offspring. So you have to figure out what you're going to do long-term with goats. We actually, for a period of time, had to actually keep a complete record and file yearly with the FDA about how many goats we had, how many babies we'd had, you know, all of those sorts of things. And then since it's so new, we also have to keep track of sort of any, look for any, you know, odd health effects and whatever else. And we've not seen any of those. These goats are as identical to a normal goat as you could possibly be, except for the fact they make a spider silk protein that they put in the milk. Other than that, lifespan's the same, behavior's the same. Huh. You know, they're getting sick the same. They're, you know, all of those things.
So, like, what is the time frame? So, say you're in charge of like a project and you have an idea on, I don't know. I'm trying to keep this like simple, but like modifying something or the next plan you want to do. What is like that time? Is it? Are we talking months, years to get approval, or?
I think now it's probably more like months.
Okay.
You know, when we first started in 2000, it was much more complicated because people just had not done much. So you know, there's a lot of transgenic animals have been made since then. So it's now it's certainly a much more efficient process. So I would say, you know, within a few months, you could probably come up with the idea. And, you know, as long as you dotted all your I's and crossed all your T's, going to the FDA and the USDA, you probably could get approval relatively efficiently.
Could you give us like a insight into something that you guys are pushing for, like something that you, an idea that is going forward, or is that like secret information?
Yeah, no, it's not. I mentioned that we've been looking at other organisms to try and see about making the spider silk for us. And so we've evolved to look at sort of two different ways completely. One is to make transgenic silkworms. So the silkworms have a spider silk gene instead of a silkworm gene. And when they spin their cocoon, they make a cocoon that has their silk as well as spider silk together with it. So that, you know, has some real efficiency gains because they're making the fiber for you.
Right.
So the other one that we're looking at is alfalfa, going with something that is fairly easy to work with. You can scale it up relatively quickly. And part of that's because this spider silk protein is really very large. It's one of the largest proteins that any animal makes. And so there are some difficulties in getting the goats to make proteins that are that large. Huh. It you know, can cause problems with the milk and things like that. So that's one of the reasons why, both in terms of silkworms and alfalfa, both of those organisms make a fairly large, make substantial amounts of large proteins. So it sort of fits with what the spider's making, and the goats don't fit quite as well. Bacteria don't fit quite as well. Hmm. So we've kind of evolved toward looking at those two. So again, you know, when we get ready to go with alfalfa, we'll have to go to the USDA for permission to do that. We've had to deal with the USDA at least a little bit with silkworms. Fortunately, they're not a pest, so you don't have too much of a problem being able to explore using those.
It's interesting. God.
So is the silk right now like widely mass produced from these goats? Or, and out of curiosity, is that like when that's made, is that like property of the university? Is it property of you? Is it property of the government? How's that work?
So the silk that we actually make is ours. Simply because, you know, we're the ones in charge of the whole process. So the answer is no, we're not doing large scale production yet. And I'm not sure that we ever will, quite frankly. We're using it now. You know, we've got about 40 goats. The real hang up is not so much the production, it's actually purifying the protein from the milk. And the process is quite straightforward, but it takes a lot of time, and it's fairly demanding in terms of making sure that you do all the steps correctly. So that really has sort of driven up a price point because it costs a lot of time and a lot of effort to be able to make, you know, even medium scale. It just drives the price up to the point where, you know, the kind of applications that you can use are not a golf shoe. You know, the cost would be, you know, extraordinarily expensive for a golf shoe. So we're looking at it for other applications like coatings. So putting coatings on medical implants, using it for drug delivery, you know, those kinds of things where, you know, you're using a fairly small amount so you can look at a much higher price point. You know, we could do with a typical output from a goat, we could cover probably several thousand catheters.
Wow.
And catheters with spider silk. And, you know, what we see is that, number one, they're become, have much less friction. So implanting a catheter is easier if we coat it. And we can include antibiotics. We can include anti-clotting factors. So the basically, you don't have to worry about infection. You don't have to worry about the catheter plugging up. So we're looking at something other than use of fibers from the goat material because it simply is relatively costly. Now, using the material from the silkworms, clearly it's going to cost more than normal silk, but not extraordinarily more. So that would be a you know a way to make fibers, and then you can talk about a golf shirt.
That's kind of interesting. Like that kind of brings me back to a question of like when you do this stuff. I mean, clearly being able to combine this and make some material from all this is a success. But it does the final result take away from the success? Where they're like, well, that's great, you made it, but it's too expensive. We can't do this. Or what kind of defines the kind of the feedback of this was a complete success versus, well, we threw money into this and that didn't work.
Yeah. That's a tough one. Cause I think that, that, you know, in our minds, we'd like to see commercial success, but I don't think that's our driving factor. Our driving factor is, you know, asking the question, how do we go about making large quantities of this? And then worrying about whether it's a price point, that, you know, can be used for various kinds of applications. So we, along the way, certainly we were cognizant of trying to keep costs down. So, you know, there are ways to do these purifications that that are very fine-tuned, very fancy, and clearly can't be scaled up to make thousands of pounds. So our thought process along the way is to try and make sure that that we have something that that if it works out, we'll scale up to large scale production.
So, so what is the hardest challenge as far as keeping these things funded and keeping your experiments going and the long-term goals you guys have? Like, what is the hardest challenge about keeping the, is it getting funding for it? Is it keeping it in the public's eye? Is it a national thing as far as funding for science like this? What is the main challenge as far as getting the result you guys eventually want?
Yeah, certainly it's keeping things funded. You know, if you had asked me, you know, in 1990, how long did I think it would be before we'd see products made out of spider silk? You know, I'd have said 10 years, somewhere on that. Well, 10, 20, and now 30 years has gone by. And there are no products out there yet. I mean, nobody's making it on large scale. There are no products out there that are predominantly made out of spider silk. So clearly, you know, it's not just us that have sort of, you know, been trying to find the glory road to making production a reasonable process. So yeah, it's been, you know, people keep saying things like, well, you know, how come somebody hasn't figured it out by now? I'll say, oh, well, because it's a hard problem and, yeah. And you know, it's not the only hard problem out there. So.
I mean, with, obviously every time you bring up like genetic manipulating and stuff like that, people think of like different horror movies and stuff like that, like, oh, combine this with this is going to cause a disease or a mutation or something like that. How far do you think we can really go with this? Do you think it's the, like the testing that's done now is all at a level where it's like, we're not playing quote unquote gods. We're just trying to see what we can work with in this world. Or do you feel there is a limit to, okay, we can't do something like, say, let's combine something with a human and see what happens?
Yeah, I think that you know, everybody I know in the field of working with transgenic animals certainly believes that you know there's just the barrier, the line to cross is that you're not going to go to humans, period. And there are multiple reasons. One is, we talked again about this sort of whole cloning issue, and that's, you know, an extremely difficult process in humans. I mean, it's hard enough to do embryo transfers for people who are doing in vitro fertilizations and things like that. No. So, you know, this just ups the ante enormously in terms of whether people, you know, can do that or not. And I also think that, you know, even with animals, it's most of the things you're trying to do are simple things. You're not going to be able to make, wholesale changes in animals just because we don't understand enough about how making a small change here might have a bigger change somewhere else. So, that's part of the reason why when we started making the goats that we chose putting it in milk. Because clearly that's an external material. You just, you know, it's easy to retrieve. It has a very defined sort of process that starts the whole milking process when they lactate. And instead of, you know, there were thoughts about doing it in saliva and doing it in urine and doing it in other kinds of, and all of those sort of, you know, the system's a little more complex. It would be much harder to try and manipulate all the genes you needed to make that happen. Huh. So I think we're still in sort of the same thing with transgenic animals where sort of you can make one gene change. If you start going to more than that, it's not clear we understand the systems well enough to do that.
So what keeps you motivated? And do you still have the same passion you had? Like you said, you know, in the 80s, you started discovering this idea and this topic. What keeps you coming back to the office and pushing forward?
I think it's the whole idea of trying to figure out a way to do larger scale production. That's why, you know, we sort of did the goats and then we did bacteria and realized neither one of those was working quite like we wanted. Then we went to the silkworms and now we're working on alfalfa. So, you know, each one's sort of a step closer to accomplishing what we want to accomplish in terms of being able to make large amounts. And, you know, large amounts for us are also things we'd like to test. Are there things, that if we had tens and hundreds of grams of this stuff, we'd try to make different kinds of products. We just don't have enough to do that right now.
Well, we really appreciate you talking with us. It was very interesting speaking with you and learning about everything. If our guests wanted to find out more about either like spider goats or research that you're into, or even helping like funding something, where can they go to find out about what you're doing?
We've got a website on the Utah State University website. If you want to just Google Utah State and spider silk and it'll take you right there.
Excellent. Excellent. You probably get asked this a lot. If I get bit by a spider goat, am I going to become Spider-Man, Goat-Man, or something in between?
You're going to become neither. You'll have a bite, and that's the extent of it. The goats out there, if you go out into the pen with our baby goats, I guarantee you that you'll have a tough time keeping from either having them try to nip you or try to suck on your fingers. So
that doesn't sound like an exciting movie. I gotta be honest, Randy.
Yeah, no, it's probably going to be pretty dull, to be honest with you. They don't walk on the ceiling, so.
Oh, dang. Randy, we can't thank you much for your time, and if more things come up, we'd love to bring you back and talk to you more about what's going on out there and see what we can do to help out.
We'd be happy to.
All right, Mike. We kind of put you on the spot prior to the interview, like, you know, to explain everything that was going on. And it was kind of a fun joke. But now that you're educated on all this, please explain the spider goats and the silk. Go ahead. Go.
Well, what happens is they take like an atom out of a spider.
An atom, you say?
Yeah, I think they use like tweezers or something to that effect.
They're down to the point where they can take atoms out of you, huh?
Yeah, I think that's the technical term for what's going on.
Okay,
there.
Do tell, do
and,
tell.
And then like they put it in a pill and they wrap it up in some grass.
Right.
And they feed it to the goat.
Right.
Now sometimes the grass kind of comes off, so they got to use that Gorilla Glue just to make extra sure it doesn't move.
Right.
And then they put it in the goat. And they got to be careful about how much Gorilla Glue they use, or else they'll get a spider goat Rilla, and then things go wild after that.
That's true. I have heard of a spider gorilla, goat Rilla.
Spider goat Rilla is the scientific term, Scott.
Right. And what do they look like again?
Well, you know, it's a goat with like a big furry tail and like mm-hmm. four extra mm-hmm. legs, mm-hmm. And they're known for their webbing and liking bananas and making really good French cheese.
You think when these science guys come on our show, they're just like, why did I say yes? Like, we have no, like, they just, you know, sides us up through the interview, and they're just like, these guys have zero idea what I do.
I feel we survived through the interview. Like, in looking back in some of our interviews, I feel we do pretty well. But it's probably the whole, here's my episode. Let me put it on. And then they hear the first 30 minutes and just go,
yeah, like, you think when we're talking to this guy, to Randy, or we're talking to, like, Dennis from the Cryonics Institute, like, they're just like, you think maybe they think they're coming on to this, like, you know, oh, my God, this show, look at who they've had on. And then they hear us talk, and they're like, oh, crap. You know, like, this is bad for the science community. Like, you're going to see an article.
This is how anti-vaxxers occur. They just, they come onto our show and they're like, there's no way smart people take this.
Yeah, you think like 2 weeks from now you're going to see like funding pulled from from spider goat experiment. It was all a hoax. Did you hear these guys? They believe in spider gorillas.
Yeah, and then like 4 years later they somehow change again, and now they're taking over the state of Utah, these spider goats.
Yeah.
Scott, it's so sad there's not a Mormon left in the world thanks to the spider goats.
Yeah, what an interesting interview, though. So, Dr. Randy Lewis. Mike, what do you got?
I'm going to leave some names out of this to leave them anonymous here okay. in my family, but I want to give you a story and kind of see what your thoughts on what occurred here. I have these family members that they decided to, they're thinking about buying a house somewhere in our state. And it's like a lower.
Oh, you just gave it away. Home. Gave it away. 1 out of 49. We know it's not Georgia, baby.
Yep.
We're on to, we're you're giving away too much, Mike.
I give you little hints. It's like when you watch WandaVision, you think you know the answer, yes. But maybe not. But so they're looking to buy a house in this like retirement kind of area. Now, they're not at that age yet to eliminate some people you might think it is. But in any case, so they see this house and they really like it, and they want to like make a deal for the house. So one of them calls up the lady and basically says, I'll pay you whatever it costs for this house. Okay.
Okay.
So let's say the house is 40. So they're like, yeah, I'm interested in paying in for 40. The second person calls up like a week later and says, hey, I'm kind of interested. I'd give you 32 cash. And the person who owns it is like, oh, no. Well, I mean, I appreciate the offer, but I have an offer.
Right.
So the first person keeps on keeps the conversation going with the 40, luring the person in, and then when it starts to get to, okay, you know, we have to start drawing up the papers or whatever, after it's lured out for a couple weeks, just kind of go, nah, change of mind.
Just backs out.
Backs out completely.
Okay.
And now this lady's kind of like holding there, just been like, she wants to get rid of the house.
Right.
But like the person she'd been talking to for 2 weeks is gone. So her first thought is, well, I've wasted so much time, I just gotta get rid of it. Goes around and contacts the original one to get $8,000 off of the house.
Okay.
So my question is that some shrewd business, or is that kind of little classless?
So I guess my question is this something that these people are known to do? Like, is there a reason behind this that they're getting like wet feet, or they're just, or they're doing this on purpose?
Well, the two of them are a couple.
Okay.
So it's like, let's say the female was the one that said the 40.
Gotcha.
Then the male said the 32. And they just had the, basically the plan of, okay, you keep on contacting her thinking she's getting to 40, drop out, so she might get desperate and come down for the 32.
It's a very interesting plan for a very low income house. Like
I'm just throwing numbers out there. I don't know the exact numbers.
Well, here, yeah. I mean, if you're $40,000 house, has to be real interesting.
Well, that's retirement homes, and all those things are relatively cheap, for what I understand.
Now, it is a kind of a evil genius kind of thing at the same time, right? It's kind of like,
yeah.
Now, I'm wondering if they've run this scam before, like if they've run it sounds like they have experience doing that, because I feel like you wouldn't know to do that unless you've tried this before somewhere.
Well, I mean, I do know, like, both of them are business people. They have their own kind of deals and all to make money. So it's not out of the realm of the scope of something that would come from their thought process. But it was one of those, when you hear the story, you're kind of like, ew.
It's a little in the definitely the seedy stage, but I guess the only thing, the saving grace would be that I guess you're saying they did say they would offer whatever they wanted, but if she had no other offers like competing with that offer, then it seems like they were kind of the only ones really interested in it anyway. But if she was competing with like a whole bunch of other ones, that is kind of crappy.
Well, I mean, I guess another part to this is, I mean, whatever the difference was, I know these people can afford it, number one. Mm. And number two, considering the person who owned the house is kind of an older person, so if they need the money and you're playing that game.
Yeah, this is how people get ahead. This is the world that I don't know, that I'm always wondering, like, how do people afford these things? Or how do they get, like, what do they do? These are the kinds of things that maybe you or me don't really know how to do or know nothing of. This must be some kind of practice that they have perfected.
I mean, I am sure, like, this is probably, like, a similar story. Like, you look at any of those Amazons and Facebooks and all. I'm sure there's some kind of dirty play story somewhere in there. I don't think there's a clean billionaire out there.
Yeah.
Without inheriting money.
Yeah. I mean, this is the type of person that like knows how to get to the front of the line at Disney World. Like, they just know how to get there, whether they're actually handicapped or not, and they have their pass and they give it to their friend. This sounds like that type of person.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you we've been over this. That wasn't a part of the deal.
You were part of the posse, though. You know, like, if you were in the mob, you would go down too with the arrest.
I would go down, but at the same time, I would go down basically saying I didn't know this was the plan going into it. I was the getaway driver. It's like, what? I thought you just needed a lift.
Well, that's a master mob boss, though. Like, they have levels of what people know, right? Like the lonely getaway driver, he doesn't know all the thing that's going on. He just knows that he's getting his cut. He doesn't know what's going on in the inside.
I understand that, but to the point of, like, if you're going to say, okay, everybody's getting 30, but one of them might get 25, like, the getaway driver should get the 25, because it was like, okay, I'm technically a part of this, but for the record, I came into this just saying, do you need a lift?
Well, okay? I mean, it's just going to be fun when you, like, you know, a couple years from now, when you go back to Disney, like, years and years, like, after your next, you know, down the line. Yeah. When you go, when you go back, when you wait, and you have to wait on those lines, you're gonna be like, man, I wish my, I wish my friend was here, and you're gonna be like, man, we could have gotten on like 20 more rides today.
Yeah, I mean, we're gonna be there in October. That's the whole big 50th thing, so I know the crowds will be nuts there. So you know, we'll see. Maybe
when you're like waiting in line for Dumbo or whatever it is, you're gonna be like, let me just pick up my phone and see what Oxygen Lady's doing. No, wait, Oxygen Lady was your enemy, not your not your friend. Yes.
Don't screw up the MCU universe right now. Okay?
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like I hear stories like that, and I don't know. Like my brain doesn't, or my like inner circle doesn't like work that way, so it's always kind of like shocking. But I'm sure these types of things go down all the time in all different industries and spaces and things like that, so it does not surprise me.
Now, out of curiosity, let's say when you were looking for a house, your wife comes up to you and basically says, I got this great idea.
Would I run?
And basically lays this out.
Part of me is like, I wouldn't call myself a skeptic, like, because that kind of sounds kind of harsh and not under an umbrella I don't want to be, but I'm, like, weary of anything like that, especially, like, when it comes to, like, massive decisions like that, like a house, you know, like real estate. I would be like, oh, I don't know, we're going to lose it, it's not going to happen if we do that, and I would probably play by the rules. There's a lot of things I don't play by the rules, but, like, things like that with, like, money and stuff like that, I'm kind of like... And this is probably why I'm like poor, because I don't take the risks that people who, like, I envy a guy who's just able to be like, I'm done with my job. I'm starting this business, and I'm just jumping in head first. Like, I want to do that so bad, but so many things hold me back, you know? And like, as my family grows and I have a kid now, like, even more and more, I feel suppressed. It's like, oh, well, I guess I'll just keep doing what I'm doing and put my head down. And I know, like, that's not the way to think, and, like, you should take chances, but I don't know if you're the same way. I'm kind of like, I get comfortable, and I'm like, well, this will work for now, and then I just, like, dream about other things.
So basically, when you're 50, you're just going to panic and sell meth.
That's fine.
Your point. Yeah.
That's fine.
You're going Walter White style.
Breaking Brennan? That's fine.
Ooh. I see a sitcom there. Wait,
maybe, I don't think I would do it. Would you?
I don't think so, especially considering, like, the person that is getting played on, for lack of a better term. I don't think I could have the machados to kind of do that. Like, I would just basically go in there. If I can't afford it, or if I want a deal, I'm going to just throw a lesser deal. In the worst case, they say no, then, like, all right, I'll grab it as is.
Yeah. I guess, though, like, in some ways, though, like, real estate is such a cutthroat, crazy, especially now. It's amazing what the houses by me are selling for, because everyone's moving in from the city because everyone's leaving. Mm-hmm. It is insane. Like, if I had more, I know this is kind of like boring, but if we had more years in this house, I would have put our house on the market during this time, because it's crazy. Everything's getting like 40, 50, 60 grand over asking price right now. It's amazing. I mean, we would need a place to go to. But, man, like, right now is the time to sell. Holy crap.
I mean, that's why they sell vans, Scott. So when you sell your house for a profit, you have a place to stay for a while until you figure out the next plan.
You know, before I met my wife, I was really tempted to take me and the dog and just hop in a car and just go. Like, just drive around the United States and see things. And part of me still has that, like, curiosity in me and that adventure that I'm like, damn, I wish I could still do that. But now it's a lot harder, and it's more like planned vacations. But I was real close to just like taking off and just spending like 2 months just out on the road doing things, just seeing what happened.
I would love that. I mean, you with your job, you were able to do that. And all. I mean, I can only imagine being able to. That's a one, like when I was in between jobs and I went to Chicago for a place, like they were talking about, like after a certain amount of years, you get a year sabbatical.
Wow.
Like I couldn't fathom how great that would be to have like a whole year to myself.
Yeah. I mean, like this country, especially, we don't value that. Like we don't value people's time off. Like, you know, giving people 2 weeks vacation is just insulting if you really think about it. It's like, oh, well, you can work 95% of the year and here's your 2 weeks. And, you know, things come up also where, like, there's things in your family or emergency days or you're sick or the time they give women after birth is just insane. Like, they basically give you, you know, 90 days or whatever the hell it is from the state. It's like... The baby's not, you're not even, one, you're not even fully recovered, the woman that is, obviously, but you're not even fully back in your swing of things. And three, the baby is so like, you're just starting to learn. Like when my wife went back to work, I would say we were just kind of starting to learn the patterns and the things the baby, when it ate and slept, like just started. And then like, they got to go back to work and it's like a whole new ball game, like figuring out daycare and who's going to do that. It's very stressful. Like it's embarrassing that like other countries, some women get a year, like a whole year with their child, which is makes perfect sense.
In Europe, they get a full year. And if they get pregnant again in that year, no issue. They just add another year to that. I mean, it's
also absolute... what it shows you, right? Wouldn't you care more about your work if your company valued you like that? You know what I mean? Like, Mike, I'm going to give you, you know, you just became a father or a mother or something like that. I'm going to give you, I got, my friend got 6 months paid from his company. Like the state gives you a couple of weeks, but it's like at a quarter, it's like a half your pay, if that. And then you know, when you're like, okay, oh, I got to take care of the kid and pay the mortgage, half my pay is not really working, so I got to go back to work, you know? But if your company gave you 6 months or a year even, like, wouldn't you, like, respect your company more and be like, wow, they actually care about me? You know what I mean? Like, I want to be here. This is a good company to work for.
Oh, easily. Absolutely. And to kind of give the reverse and all, as you remember my last company I was at, I can tell a story. Like after I left, how I remember somebody told me how somebody there was like going in for surgery, and I don't know the extent of it, but it's like they were going to be in the hospital for a couple of days, supposedly, quotation marks for legal reasons, my former boss basically told them, well, you are going to be logging in online while you're in the hospital, right?
It's ridiculous, man. It's like I don't even care about, you know, I'm the man in the relationship, obviously. Well, you know, I wear the pants. No, but I don't care about me going back to work that much. You know, like I could take some time here and there. But like when my wife went back to work and figuring out daycare, like that was kind of like, he's not, and then your child is so young and you're like throwing them to the wolves. Like, it's like, okay. And listen, the daycare thing has been great. Like, it's been good for him, but it's still very, very expensive. You're not back on your feet yet. It's a whole schedule change, figuring out, asking family if they can help out one day a week and this. Like, it's a whole shock to the system. And a woman is not ready at 90 freaking days after. It's just, it's incredible. Like, and if we're going to say we value like the future and we value children, and like, it makes no sense to give them that much time. It's bizarre. And you know, the vacation time is ridiculous. This is opening up a whole can of worms, but the price, they, kids going to college after school and coming strapped with $200,000 on their back, and they get a job at Enterprise, rent a car for $45,000 a year, you know, and they're not working in their major because almost no one does, first off. And then second off, it's like, well, all the good jobs, you need experience to get, like, you need time. And there's no time for them to spend, like, actually learning. This is my whole theory, but forever, for the last 15 years or so, has been almost every job. Now, doctors may be different, lawyers may be different. You can be trained on that job. So if they interviewed you for your character and your work ethic and, like, if you were a good fit for the company, you could be trained how to do that job without some stupid college degree that you spent a bazillion dollars on. Now, college is great. It's your time to be a kid still again, basically, and party and do all this stuff. But there's so much fat in college bills. It's like, oh, I'm a communications major. Oh, but you got to take biology for two science classes before you even start. It's like, I want to do TV production. Like, that's what I wanted to do. And, like, I don't know. It drives me crazy. And it's just getting worse and worse for kids. Like, I do feel for them.
And add to it all the kind of, like, smaller jobs. They're asking for college degrees and all. Like, when my dad retired as a forklift driver,
yep,
you needed a bachelor's degree to be a forklift driver. And I'm like, what college course are you taking for 4 years that teaches you,
yeah,
to drive a forklift?
Like, why couldn't they? No, yeah, why couldn't they hire him and train him for a month? For whatever job he wanted to do, you know. And this is like one of my biggest passions. It's like, somewhere along the line, America, we discouraged the trade schools. Like, that was. So I got to say, it was like in the 70s and 80s. All of a sudden, college, it became like, you have to go. Maybe the 90s really bad, too. Meanwhile, these trade schools are a year and a half. You're coming out with a skill you're never going to lose. You don't just lose it. Like, my TV production stuff, the more I don't do it, the more I'm a dinosaur. It's old stuff, disappears. I know, you know? So the more, you know, there's always going to be a need for plumbers, heaters, mechanics, electricians. And a lot of these guys work 2-3 years on the actual jobs, and then they become managers, or they become the salesmen, or they become the bosses of these companies. My best friend is a perfect example. College wasn't for him. And I told him, you got to go to trade school, man. He delayed for a while. Eventually he went for heating, ventilation, and air conditioning, HVAC, and dude is killing it right now. I think he worked 2 years out on the installations. Now he's kind of in an office, and he goes out to sites and makes sure, you know, he calls what parts they need, and the dude is just making tons of money. And it's a shame, man. It really is a shame, because all those skills are something we all wish we had. Every time you got to call the plumber, the electrician, you're like, man, I wish I just knew how to do this. It's a criminal thing we did. And it's funny, because my dad talks about when in his high school they had a trade part of it, but it was like encouraged back then. They were like, you should do it. And it was like really like high tech, and they had like everything at the time, and people were like, this is a really like great program to go to. But yeah, man, it's a absolute crime that we have somehow along the way we made like trades for like stupid kids. And people can't see me right now, I'm making like quotes. And in fact, it's like some of the most brilliant people. My father, school was never for him, and I find him insanely genius, because I still call him at 70 years old to come do everything for me, like if I need help doing something.
Oh yeah, it's always the same thing. Like, I look up to my dad. Like, anytime something goes wrong in the house, the first thing I do is call him. And I always sit back and go, man, I wish I had all his knowledge. Meanwhile, anytime he needs to like print something or connect his phone to something, he's like calling me, and he's like, man, I wish I went to college and I would had all your knowledge, you know. So it's always that weird cross and all. You don't really hear many that go right in the middle and all, that have enough in both sides.
And also, if you think about this logically, right, shouldn't college be, if we're gonna make you do core courses, because everyone's got to do like the 2 years of the core courses, shouldn't they be like all life skills? If you're really technically doing what a college is supposed to, right, which is preparing, mm-hmm, preparing kids for the workforce, right? That's ultimately what college is. Shouldn't it be first years, I'm going to learn how to replace outlets and do drywall and plumbing and balance a checkbook and how to invest money. Like, all these things that we all figure out later on in life, or we pay for someone to do it for us. So you, if you came out with all these life skills plus the classes you wanted in your major, I would sit here and tell you, wow, college was a really good investment. I can't sit there and say that personally.
If anything, I would say these courses should be in high school. So you have your option. All right, I got my life skills from high school. Maybe I don't want to go to college. Maybe, 100%. Like you said, go to a trade school. Maybe, like, just join in with some company and grow up from there, or make your own company. Maybe we should be doing this, right? So we say, all right, so we don't have to be relying on colleges to say, you did your 12 years, you got your diploma, you choose how your path goes from here.
Yeah, like, put it this way. If my son, 17 and a half years from now, comes up to me and says, Dad, I would love to go to, I would love to be a carpenter. One, I'm going to be tap dancing because I won't have to pay for college. But two, I'd be like, dude, you're making a better decision than I did. Like, the point is also, you don't have to do that forever. You can have a skill that you could always fall back on and make money and do whatever you want afterwards. You know what I mean? Like, you could work as a carpenter, and then if you want to go to school at, on the weekends at nighttime, is there? By the time he's in college, college cannot keep up with Google. Like, kids, I do see people, all the big guys on Instagram and all that are all just entrepreneurs and people who did their own thing. Mark my words, there is going to be a little bit of college reform going on, hopefully within the next 10 years. It's because kids are not inspired by college right now. Like, talking to my nieces and nephews, they're inspired by the YouTubers. And then when you talk to high school kids, they're inspired by the Dave Portnoy's and the Barstools, like that kind of thing, like the influence on them. And these are not college, like, guys like, oh, I went to college for this. These are guys who stepped out of the box and tried something.
Mm. I don't suppose any of those kids look up to podcasters in any way.
Well, if you really want to go, I mean, the problem is, like, I was going to say Rogan, but he had a whole successful career before that.
He was on a network TV show.
That really helps.
Stand-up comedian.
Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know, man. I could talk about that particular subject. You know, like, when they say, like, in comedy, like, you don't find your voice for, like, 7-10 years, like, things that you're passionate about. Right before this pandemic started, one of the main bits I was doing was, like, all about discouraging the trades and how I don't know anything and stuff like that. And it was like, I felt like I was, like, hitting something on stage, like, oh my God, I'm actually, like, speaking my opinion. I'm not telling this silly joke that has, like, a silly punchline. Like, I'm actually saying something. I'm like, maybe I'm getting there. And then, of course, everything shut down.
Yeah, God's like, oh, you're almost making your dream come true. Nope. Mm-hmm. Let me put a little wrench in there.
Yeah, I'm the story of my life, but what are you going to do?
Yeah.
We still have our podcast, Mike, and, you know, we're very close to quitting our day jobs. So,
oh, absolutely.
So we're this close. We're just kind of, you know, weighing our options. Do we sign this contract with Spotify or this one with Apple? Like, you know, our lawyers are looking into it at the moment.
Yeah, I tried to sell our company to a Russian bot.
That would be cool.
Work out well, yeah.
Real quick, before we get out of here and play your, I know you got something. I'm a little disappointed in us, Mike.
What happened, Scott?
I hate to say this and admit this to the audience, but we dropped recently in the podcast ratings.
No, did we?
Yeah. You know, we've been up there for so long. Apparently, according to Chartable.com,
mm-hmm.
We dropped 9 spots in the Philippines in comedy interviews. In the Philippines, Mike.
In comedy interviews. That's very specific.
There's
90 other podcasts that, like, people are listening to, like, Filipinos are saying, no, I need more interviewing comedies. That's specifically what we look for here in the Philippines.
There's definitely 4 kids who are on a trip from the United States in the Philippines that listen to comedy interviews. And that's where they got that data from. That is literally probably where we're at. But we dropped we are only the 91st or something like that now podcast in the Philippines.
I feel we're the podcast where the parents want to teach the kids English, but the kids are acting up, so the dad had to teach them a lesson. So he's like, all right, you're going to try to figure out English from this.
Yeah. Yeah, right? not, please don't. They're like, I hope they're like following you when you're like mispronouncing guys' names and stuff. And they come to they come to America and they're like,
they're like, your English is so broken, my lord.
Who'd you learn from? Was he also from the Philippines? No, he grew up in America.
Yeah. Stop telling me Dukes of Hazzard facts. This will not get you into IBM.
Oh God. Yeah. Apparently the Philippines like us, and we've been getting listens lately in Ukraine.
Ooh.
You know?
Yeah. We get those weird variety of countries from here and there. We can't hit the one we're actually in, it seems.
Yeah.
We'll eventually get there. I mean, that's what makes an international podcast. You hit every small country in the universe before you come after the big boys.
Listen, my friends in the Philippines, we can get back. We will work hard to go up those 9 notches, and we will deliver all Filipino content if you want to throw a little sponsor our way. We will have Filipino guests on. I'll bring my friend Jackie on. She's Filipino. We'll go all Filipino cast if you guys got a couple bucks to throw our way.
Yeah, apparently all I have to do is say kamusta. That's apparently how you say hello in Filipino.
I'm sure that's accurate too. Like that's exactly how you say it.
But yeah. Like I'm not even going to hit the WAV file here to verify it. I know I'm good.
Oh God, I hope it's something completely different. But all right, Mike, what do you got? Before we go.
Before we go, I brought back a little game of ours, Scott, that we played once before. If you may recall, could be close to a year from now, I challenged you to a game of figuring out quotes, whether they were from Martin Luther King or then President Donald J. Trump. So tonight, I have a new episode for you, Scott. two people who... they should be just called twins because they're that much alike. So, Scott, I'm going to give you a quote, and you're either going to tell me it was said by Mahatma Gandhi or the late Rush Limbaugh.
So, two very similar people.
Like, it's day and day. Not even this night and day stuff. Day and day.
I mean, you couldn't throw two opposite people at me? Like,
I didn't want to... I didn't want to make this game too difficult or too easy, so.
All right. Gandhi or Limbaugh?
All right. Quote number one. Life is busy. There are daily concerns and obligations that have to be met. And to take the time to think about how precious and special a human life is, that you get only one. And that every wasted minute is lost. You can't get it back.
I feel like you're through. Okay. I feel like you're throwing me a quote that I would immediately think is Gandhi because it sounds like thoughtful and it sounds kind of smart and laid out and kind of spiritual, which is why I'm choosing Rush Limbaugh.
You caught me, Scott. One for one.
Yes.
One for one. All right.
I feel like that was one of his moments where he said something normal.
Hmm. Newspapers should
you forgot to include the two lines after that. I hate black people. Go Trump.
No, yeah. Well, I mean, it was on the next page. My bad. Yeah. After that was said, he said something about how terrible Donovan McNabb was. Very awkward.
Exactly.
Okay. Newspapers should be read for the study of facts. They should not be allowed to kill the habit of independent thinking.
Okay, so now I feel like you're doing the opposite to me. I think you're throwing me a Limbaugh comment, like something that would seem Limbaugh-ish, but maybe that came out of Gandhi's mouth. So I'm going to go with Gandhi.
I can't trick you, Scott. Two for two.
This is great because usually, if you guys are just tuning in, I bomb at these games generally horribly. Like, it was nice last week when I played a dumb game with Mike and he bombed horribly. It was kind of like a little bit of redemption for me because usually I'm the victim of most of these.
You're kind of like the Mets who apparently they practice their World Series celebration during spring training. You're already getting the trophy ready for.
I had a feeling that was coming up tonight. I get the playfulness of it, like if they were just having fun, you know, like kind of at practice. But if it's something like that, I'm saying there's no cameras allowed during this. Yeah. Like, I get it if you're like having, if you're, you know, like some coaches like will take their team bowling or something like that as like a team building activity. Like, I could see like being silly and fun because that's kind of the spring training vibe a little bit, but it just comes off bad when you're the Mets. If it was the Yankees doing it, like, you'd be like, oh, okay. But it's the Mets. Mets. And it's going to be like, I guarantee when they miss the playoffs, someone's editing a video of them, and it's probably going to be me, celebrating the World Series and not making the playoffs.
You just see the video of them jumping and they're diving on each other with the little small headline, fourth place Mets.
Exactly. 100%.
75 and 89.
Listen, more than that, what makes me go crazy, like, Noah Syndergaard, I like the guy, but can we not post a picture with our shirt off every 2 seconds? Like, you're injured for a year and a half. You're not coming back till June at least. Do you have to show yourself pitching with your shirt off when you had a +4 ERA? Like you're not Jacob deGrom. Every team loves Jacob deGrom because you know why? Jacob deGrom is not only the top three pitchers in baseball, he keeps his mouth closed and all he wants to do is win, and he proves it. Syndergaard, you're not that even remotely deGrom, and you walk around with this, I think it's the nickname. I really think once they called him Thor, it went to his head, and he's just trying to put this persona on.
Well, technically, he's 50% better than Harvey because he went stark nude for some magazine, if I recall.
The body issue, I think.
Yeah, when he got the Dark Knight. And,
isn't it crazy that Harvey dropped off so hard that we don't even think about him anymore? Like, Syndergaard's still, you know, he's still a good pitcher. I don't know if he'll ever be a number one, but Harvey came in like, you thought this guy was going to be one of the top pitchers in baseball for 10 years or so, and he dropped off so hard where he's signing minor league deals.
It's a pity. Scott, are we stalling so we don't get to the other question so you can close the episode going 2 for 2 out of curiosity?
Yes, that's what I was going. Anyway, Jacob deGrom, I love you.
Okay. Scott, your third quote, a nation's culture resides in the hearts and souls of its people.
Okay, kind of see what you're doing here. I'm thinking there's another trick play, but this one's not as like, there's not as much misdirection in here. Okay. You could see either guy saying it. Like, if initially you heard that, I would lean Limbaugh, which is why I'm going Gandhi here.
You got the psychology down. 3 for 3, Scott.
Yes. 3 for 3. This might be the best I've ever performed at any game, ever.
Probably. Like, usually we got to get to question 14 before you're on number 3, correct?
And then usually, like, halfway through, I forget what we're playing, and I'm like, wait, what do I have to do again?
Even if you are a minority of one, the truth is the truth.
Limbaugh.
Gandhi.
Oh, see, that sounded like an actual Gandhi quote. That's why I went Limbaugh. I didn't know if you were doing this guys the whole game. All right.
You're still batting .750 right now.
Yeah, that's a great percentage.
Yeah. People are pursuing happiness, but they're pursuing things that will never, ever make them happy. And they don't know that. They've got a distorted view of what will make them happy, what happiness is, and it's based on what they see on television.
Something about the distorted view thing, like, I could see coming out of Limbaugh's mouth. Like, before that, it sounded very Gandhi-esque, but something about the distorted view. I'm going with Rush Limbaugh.
Back on the board, Scotty.
Let's go. Let's go. All right, 800, baby.
There's nobody who cares more about you than you, and there's nobody better equipped to take care of you than you.
This is a tough one. There's a lot of yous in it, which makes me think an imbecile said it. But could it be a little translation thing with Gandhi? I'm going Limbaugh.
Fire, Scott. 6 for 7.
Yes, let's go, baby.
Or was that 5 for 6?
I can see me like, there's a distorted view that makes you from you. I don't know if that's Limbaugh or Alex Jones, my impression, but I feel like they're kind of similar guys.
I think that's closer to Limbaugh. Yeah. You did that well. Okay. First they ignore you. Then they laugh at you. Then they fight you. Then you win.
I could see the Limbaugh in it, but it sounds a little too smart for me, so I'm going Gandhi.
Damn, you're on fire, Scott. Another one.
Oh, my God. I need to retire. This might be the last. Even
close to this.
This might be the last episode, guys. This might be it.
Human nature fascinates me.
Oh, wow. That's it. Gandhi.
Rush.
See, I was going to go Rush because it sounded too much like a Gandhi quote, and I thought we were done with the trickery. Yeah. All right. All right. Fine.
A small body of determined spirits, fired by an unquenchable faith in their mission, can alter the course of history.
Jesus Christ. If this is Limbaugh, this might be the brightest thing he ever said. Sounds very Gandhi-esque. Are you tricking me? Are you tricking me? Gandhi.
Gandhi.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Yeah. It sounded a little too educated for Limbaugh. A little too much. Like, I could see him go ranting, but it sounded too polished.
Nobody can hurt me without my permission.
Limbaugh.
Gandhi.
That's what I said.
That's what you thought you said.
Yeah.
Charity is willingly given from the heart.
Gandhi.
Rush.
Come on. He didn't do charity.
I'm just going by the sight. Don't know what to tell you. He did do charity, but that's for tax reasons. My life is my message.
Limbaugh.
Gandhi.
I'm failing now.
Back in your old ways.
Yeah, Scott. I was going to say, we could have ended this a little while ago. Now I'm starting to show my true colors.
See, you're like the Mets. Like, you're like, oh, spring training's going great. We did our pre-World Series celebration. We're like 7-1. Nothing could go wrong. And here's the All-Star.
And a lot of times the Mets have like a nice record around like June 25th. And you're like, okay. We're in it. We're like two games above 500. And then like by the All-Star break, they always have like a 8 out of 10 losing streak.
Yeah. And it's always like a weird one where it's like, we got swept by the Pirates? What?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
what happened there?
All the time.
I know it when I don't know it. Sometimes I know it when I don't think I know it. I need to trust myself in these moments, these rare moments of self-doubt.
Come on, that's gotta be Limbaugh. It's gonna be Gandhi, isn't it? I'm going Limbaugh.
It's Limbaugh.
All right, yeah. I could see that big.
There we go.
I could see that big doofus saying that.
Okay, to believe in something and not to live it is dishonest.
It could be either of these guys. Gandhi.
It's Gandhi.
All right, we're back, baby.
You're doing good. We're near the end here. I mean, we could be talking about double digits here, Scotty.
All right.
We could be.
All right.
Freedom of press is a precious privilege that no country can forego.
Oh, God. See, that screams Rush to me. It screams Rush to me. But are you pulling the trickeration where it's a Gandhi quote where he talked about the press? But I'm going to go my... No, I'm going Gandhi.
Gandhi.
Yes! Yes! Yes!
Okay, we got a couple more. The newspaper man has become a walking plague. He spreads the contagion of lies and calamities.
Again, that sounds like Rush to me. But are we going opposite here? I'm going Rush Limbaugh.
Gandhi.
See, that was a triggeration. That I should have went with the gut. When you took a standardized test, did you always, what was your go-to when you didn't know the answer? What letter was your go-to?
What letter? Probably C.
It was me. C. Every time. Every time it was C. I remember some kids used to say abacadabra or whatever, and that's how they would fill out their form. And just hopefully it would get like a 60.
Yeah. Like A's are always usually... it sounds right, but it's the trickery.
Mm-hmm.
B is always a little off. C sounds about right. And then D is always like left field,
mm-hmm.
where you're always like, D. It's never D.
Yep.
It's never D.
Yep.
There hasn't been one test where the answer has been D.
Yeah.
I got to be honest.
Yeah. That's why you failed most of them. But
that's why I got D's, because I never answered D. And finally, Scott, events sometimes are the biggest teachers, as opposed to words, lectures, and that kind of thing.
Limbaugh.
Scott, I think you got like 13 out of 17 here.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
It's a miracle.
I can go to sleep tonight. I can go to sleep happy. You know, I look at my wife, my kid, and my dog. I'm kind of like, eh. But,
I got a feeling you'll be like walking around the house and you just randomly, hey, honey. You remember when Rush Limbaugh said, bah, 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 bah?
You know, I look at them and I'm like, they're cool. But like tonight I'm like, I'm the guy who deserves the credit in this house tonight. Like I'm the winner for once.
I feel you're going to go to sleep tonight and you're going to have a dream. You're like on a cloud with Limbaugh and Gandhi smoking a cigar, just laughing about each other's quotes.
See, that sounds horrible. Like, I don't know if I would want to hang out with either of those guys. Like, Rush seems too intense for me. He'd be babbling the whole time. And then Gandhi, he would always like, we'd be trying to hang out and he'd be like trying to get all intellectual and weird. Like, dude, can we just watch the game a little bit and like, you know. Chop it up a little bit.
You're like, oh, you know, they got a nacho bar here, and he's like probably fasting.
Yeah.
And you're like, bro, why'd you do this during football?
Yeah.
Rush, shut up about Donovan McNabb. He's been retired for 6 years. We got it.
Yeah. I just definitely wouldn't want, like, I feel like one would be too serious and one would just be rambling constantly. But, All right, Mike, I finally could retire a winner. So this is our last episode, guys. This is the end. We had a good run. We almost made it to 350 episodes. But, you know, 348 sounds perfectly fine to me.
Yeah, that's a way to go out. You get your reward. You drop the mic. You never look back. Anybody's like, you want a rematch? You're like, no, I'm good.
Actually, 349. We just one short of 350. That's fine. Berlo, so, time to go. Anything to promote?
I will promote Gubba Rum. We've received a couple of free bottles from them from a future guest on the podcast. Like no other rum you have tasted before, cane base, coconut and vanilla infusions, 35% ABV, wicked smooth, delicious. I had Gubba Gold Dark Vanilla Rum. It was super smooth. made a delicious rum pineapple upside down cake with it. Look for Gubba Rums in your local liquor store or follow them on Twitter at GUBBARUM.
How come no one makes like pineapple right side up cakes?
I mean, I guess it's too easy. I mean,
you're like, why is it always upside down?
I mean, it was made in the 50s. It had to be classy in some ways, you know. I'm sure they flipped it over, then somebody put a flambé on it, and everybody looked at it as they smoked cigarettes in the living room in front of their children.
Yeah, I feel like in the 50s, that probably blew people's mind. Like, what if I turn the cake upside down? Oh, my God. You know, like that had to blow their brains apart.
Well, I mean, they had like the Depression and World Wars back then, so I'm sure they needed something to look forward to.
Oh, because we don't have our own Depression and wars going on, but we don't.
Well, yeah. Why do you think I brought it back, Steve, huh? I will read between the lines.
I will promote. We had former guests of the band Coheed and Cambria. We had Josh and Travis on. I would love to get Claudio on one day, which is the lead singer, and they just released, Claudio just released under his project, his solo project, The Prize Fighter Inferno. He released a new song called Sweet Talker, and they're just an awesome band that I've been following for years, and just, I don't know, we've been talking about musicians a lot as far as our Instagram campaign here. If you check it out, we've been getting some good reactions from that. It's kind of been a good little like review of all the amazing musicians we've had on. We have so many more coming up, by the way. We got some scheduled for April. We got some scheduled for May. So there's some really cool stuff coming on. These episodes have been really fun, man. It's we keep doing this because we love it, but it's kind of the guests we get on to talk to that keep bringing us back and kind of reinvigorating the fire. Like, if it was just me and Mike, we would have ended at episode 53. Like, we would have been we would have been done. So it's the people we bring on. So you guys hopefully learned a lot today from us, not so much from Dr. Lewis. But you probably learned a lot more from us. But I want to thank Dr. Randy Lewis for coming on. Guys, keep following us on Instagram, Twitter, and please share the podcast and leave some reviews on iTunes. We're getting some good listens lately and some good reactions, so please keep that up. Other than that, life is funny, laugh at it, and keep the wind at your back.
And Magadang Gabby to our friends in Philippines. That means good night.
Say it again.
Magadang Gabby.
That sounds like a girl you met like in high school. Like the old Magadang Gabby. She was a fox.
Well, Google told me this is the answer, so clearly it has to be.
Bye-bye, guys.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out! Here comes the Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud. He's got radioactive blood. Can he swing from a thread? Take a look overhead. Hey there!